Blog Talk Radio.
Shalom Aleichem, this is Mark Lichtenwalter coming to you live on this 23rd day of January 2019. This is Fundamentally Mormon. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. Today we are broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon and on facebook.com/lazurus1977 and on YouTube at youtube.com/user/God is my compass, channel name Messiah Ben Joseph. So I was able to fund the radio program this morning, and today I was given a promotion for a year, so hopefully things don't get screwed up, but I paid $199.99 for a year of service on Blog Talk Radio because they gave me a half-off deal, which they've never done before, and today's the first day that I could fund it, and I've been wanting to fund this for many, many, many months. We just never have the money, and I didn't talk to my wife about it because, well, I mean, I told her she's been wanting me to fund the whole thing, and usually it's $400 for the year, but things have just been tight, so I jumped on this as soon as they gave me that offer. So hopefully we can start doing longer programs, 60 minutes. Now, today I do have to go pick up my daughter at 10:30, so I have to cut it short a little bit. But tomorrow I should be able to do a full program. And I want to do an hour. But sometimes I get on these chapters and reading, and I just want to read until I'm done. So we can actually go up to 3 hours a day. That's 2 hours of live streaming on Blog Talk Radio and 1 hour of overdrive, and I don't want to do that. I used to do that on my old radio show, The Kingdom of God or Nothing, which you can find at Blog Talk Radio and on iTunes. I used to do 2 to 3 hours 5 days a week. That's when I worked for the post office, and things were a lot easier to do back then because so I would pick up the mail. I was supposed to be in Emory at 3:45 at the post office, and I would pick the mail up, and I would start picking up all of the post office, go to each post office in Emory County, and get back to Price in Carbon County and unload my box truck, and then load my semi-truck with all of Carbon County and all of Emory County mail except for Green River. And I would drive to Provo to the post office distribution center. And from 8 to 8:30, I would be off. And it was kind of nice. I actually kind of regret moving down here for many different reasons. It's cheaper, and we have a home with a yard now, and we just rent because we don't know where we want to really end up. But I do like it down here. But with that post office job, when I moved down here, like, I'm not going to get into the details, but things got really stupid. So back when I used to live in Spanish Fork, I'd get off at 8:30, and we'd go over to the Provo Rec Center every night, Monday through Friday, and sometimes Saturdays, and go swimming from 8:30 to 10 p.m., and then we would, usually be out of there by 10:30 and back to the house by 11, and I would do my radio show from 11 to 1 in the or to 2 in the morning, so 3 hours, and I'd sit in my lazy boy chair, and the kids would go to bed, and my wife, Kim, would read because she was a stay-at-home mother back then, and then I would about, I don't know, 1:30 in the morning, even though I'd still be on the show, I would, my cell phone is how I connect to the studio so that I can broadcast. And I didn't do videos back then. And I was able to still talk to guests and whatnot until 2 a.m. And then at 2, actually, I think 2:05 was the time I was scheduled to be at the dock putting the mail cages into my semi truck. And by 2:30, I'd usually have it loaded. I'd get the registers, and which is, I'm not going to get into that either. And I would be out the gate by 2:30-ish, 2:30 to 3. And then because they have to process the mail, and I would have to take it back down to Carbon and Emery counties. And then I would get off around, well, I was supposed to be off by 6 a.m, but things would get a little bit screwy sometimes. And like with the weather going over Soldier Summit, which is actually one of the reasons I quit my job, because like some of the really bad storms 2 years ago when I quit, actually this month, 2 years ago, for 2 months. So we had the Christmas rush, which started in November, and it was just nuts with all the mail. And I wasn't getting any sleep. I was working 7 days a week. We'd have to go over the pass with these blizzards. And it was really bad for 2 months. And there were times when I wouldn't get done until 9 or 10 in the morning. So the post office in Emory opens up at 8. But sometimes I just couldn't get there because of how bad the weather was. And when I would, like, on the days when I'd get to Emory at 10, and I would be done finally, the post office had an apartment in Farron where I would sleep at. But when we moved down here, that it just became a mess. And so I wouldn't get to bed till like 11, or I'd get home like at 10:30 or 11, and I would have to take a shower and sleep. And even though I wouldn't get down to Emory until 10 or whatever, I would get written up or threatened to be written up if I did not pick the mail up in Emory at 3:45. So when I would pick up from the box, the blue box, and from the post office, I'd have to scan it. And if I didn't scan it at the 3:45, I'd get written up. And I was so stressed out, and I wasn't getting any sleep. And when we moved down here, I didn't have a place to go to up there, even though my manager said, so they have these apartments, and they have one in Provo for the guys. The guys that come up from Kanab to Provo, they actually get up there and they are allowed to go to this apartment and go sleep and take a nap or whatnot. And at this apartment. And they told me if I move down here that they will allow me to use the apartment. So it was a 2-bedroom apartment. And there was two guys, one in each bedroom. And I said, I don't care where the bed is. Put it in the living room, put it in the kitchen. It doesn't matter to me. Just like, let me have a place to go sleep. And after I moved down here, they decided not to allow me to do that. So I ended up putting building a little thing in the back of my semi truck where I could go in and lay down. And then the postmaster over the Provo postal facility where I would park the distribution center, they flipped out when they found out I was sleeping in the back of my trailer, because my semi truck was a day cab only. It didn't have a sleeper because there's no room in the Price post office for a trailer with anything more than a day cab. It already sticks out on the sidewalk. It's not long enough. So I didn't have the opportunity to have a sleeper to sleep in it, you know. And so I would, so we bought another minivan. So we had two minivans, and I took the seats out the back and I put a twin mattress in the back. And in the wintertime, it is really cold, and I wasn't going to run my car for 4 hours while I was there waiting for the mail to be processed. So I got a propane heater and like a propane, well, yeah, it was a propane heater, but it just wasn't working. Because my boss reneged on what he said, like, we should never have moved down here. I actually kind of miss living in Spanish Fork, and the reason I miss it is because there we would attend the LDS church. And even though I'm no longer a member of the LDS church because I was excommunicated for apostasy from my beliefs, mainly in the Adam God doctrine, which was taught by Brigham Young and Heber C. Kimball and a whole bunch of other people, and even Joseph Smith taught it. And I can't prove that right now, but I have proved it in the past. I just don't have the documents right now. But and it's even taught in the temple. I don't want to get into that either. But my stake president in Vermont said that I was an apostate. And when I told him about my experiences with Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ, where I've seen them face to face and spoken with them, and our Father in heaven placed his hands on my head and sealed me up into eternal life, which it talks about that in my patriarchal blessing. He said that I was a heretic, and he got all red-faced. I wasn't even allowed to attend my excommunication, which really upset me because the LDS Church was my life. I loved going to church. But when he moved out to Utah, the bishop didn't have a problem with me speaking at church or in church or participating. And but the stake president was concerned, so he wrote Thomas Monson in the First Presidency, who I know. Well, I knew Thomas Monson because I dated his great niece, and I was actually my first wife was President Hinckley's great niece. Her name's Rebecca Lindbergh. Anyway, but I was married to her, and we used to go to church at the Joseph Smith Memorial Building from time to time with President Hinckley back when he was president of the church. So, and they knew me anyway, but the stake president received a response from the First Presidency of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and told they were they told my stake president, don't let basically leave him alone. He can attend and he can speak, and it's not a concern. So, and it really drives me a little bit nuts because, like, even President Hinckley, back in 2004, I wrote him a detailed letter about my first experience with Jesus Christ in the Salt Lake Temple, where I was taken out of my body and I was taken by Jesus Christ in the spirit through the Salt Lake Temple. And I went into the Holy of Holies where I heard the voice of the Father and I was given instruction. And I had very detailed accounts of it. And this isn't something that, like, this room is actually not known about, but I knew about it, which gave them interest in me. There is a room behind the east. It's in the east tower, right under the angel Moroni. It's the highest room in the temple, where there is an altar, and that is the true Holy of Holies. And when I drew detailed diagrams of it and showed and wrote President Hinckley about my experience, he sent L. Tom Perry to come meet me to interview me about this. And it was kind of funny because on, I think it was a Thursday, I got a call from my stake president, and he said, and I was in a singles ward back then in Taylorsville, Utah. It was the Hawarden Park ward. Actually, I think it's in West Valley, but it's like right on the border of Taylorsville and West Valley. And he said, somebody wants to meet you on Sunday. He wants you to be to the sacrament room early so that he can speak with you. And I said, who is it? And he said, just be there. Will you be there? And I said, yeah, of course. So me and my then fiance, Rebecca Lindbergh, President Hinckley's great niece, went to and we sat in the pews, the back row, and waited for this mysterious visitor to come. And I heard the foyer door open, and I looked over, and there's L. Tom Perry, and he comes over and he shakes my hand. And I'd seen him around Temple Square because, like, I was activities coordinator in the singles ward. Every week, I would say, okay, this is an ongoing thing. We are meeting by the flagpole just east of the tabernacle or west of the temple. And I think it was like at 9:30, they closed the doors for music and the spoken word. And we would go there every single week. And then after, at 10:30, we would go, and if you walk, and you can still do this, maybe I shouldn't share this, I'm not going to share how you get in. Anyway, there is a specific door in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, and you walk up to that door, and there will be a man standing there, and he will say, "Are you here for church?" And the sidewalk ends at that point, so obviously you're there to go in. And you say yes, and he opens the door, and you walk in, and you go upstairs to the chapel, and you go to church with President Hinckley. And it actually, I'm not sure if Russell M. Nelson goes there, but I know Dallin H. Oaks goes there, and Thomas Monson didn't go there, even though that was his ward. He liked to go to his home ward over there, just south of 33rd South, over in I don't know what the name of that Mill Creek area. Anyway, his house is over in that. He was over in that area where he lived, which he kept, even though he lived in the apartments owned by the church in the well, it's not an apartment; it's in the church office building. Anyway, but he liked to go to that, so he didn't even go to his own ward. But he went to the ward where he was a bishop in that ward, and where people knew him on a personal basis. And anyway, but L. Tom Perry, he interviewed me, and I remember the last thing he said to me. He slapped me on the back with it. He always reminded me of a used car salesman, like not sleazy, but that grin that he had and that smile on his face. And he was a large man. He was a very tall man. And he slapped me on the back and he said, "Well, God's the one that chooses his prophets. We sure don't." Didn't understand that then. I absolutely understand that now. The reason I bring it up is because I told my stake president, you know, and I even have the, and you can find the pictures to the letter with the archive numbers, because the letter that I wrote them was archived in the First Presidency Vault and the church archives. And like it even says Office of the First, it's a stamp with a number on it. Office of the First Presidency, been a while since, and I still have the letter too. They sent me a copy, they kept the original. But anyway, he said, L. Tom Perry said after we met, he said, and it's kind of funny because the ward house where the singles ward was that I went to was also the stake center. So L. Tom Perry says, your stake president wants to meet with you after sacrament, and go ahead and go meet with him after sacrament. And then he went up and sat on the stand, and like he talked for a little bit, and he told everybody, you know, "Hey, your talks that you have today, just give them, give me some time at the end of sacrament meeting." And then he talked, and then like as they were singing the closing prayer, he left. And I told my stake president in Vermont, when he accused me of being a bald-faced liar for telling him about my experiences with Jesus Christ and with Heavenly Father, I said, "Well, all you have to do is call L. Tom Perry, and he'll tell you." And I tried to show him the copies of the letter, and he said I made it all up. And like, and so when, you know, L. Tom Perry died, it really made me very upset. But I know that they all know who I am. But when we lived in Spanish Fork, I could go to church, and we never had any problems. And I couldn't deny, and that's the whole thing. They said I could be rebaptized if I would deny the Adam God doctrine. And I said, I can't deny it. I know it's true. And it's taught in the temple. And but they allowed me to participate, and nobody was mean to me. And it was funny because, like, I would always I used to be the gospel doctrine teacher for many years. I elders quorum teacher and elders quorum secretary. And I always had comments because I study a lot because I love God and I love the scriptures. And when we lived in Spanish Fork, it was so funny because, like, people would be like, I feel the Spirit so strong when you speak and you give your testimony and all these things. And, like, I never told them in the ward that I have had, you know, personal experiences with our resurrected Savior and with our Father in heaven in the flesh. Like, it wasn't a dream. I mean, I've had those too. It wasn't a vision. It was I embraced them in the flesh and I felt them. And people would. They would always tell me, oh, I love it when you give your comments and everything. And then they would find out that I was excommunicated, and they would go to my wife and they would be like, I don't understand. I feel the Spirit is so strong around him. But they were still nice, even after, like, the information got out about my experiences. Like, everybody was very kind to us. And when we moved to Emory County, everybody was very kind to us at first. And then the stake president found out that I had been excommunicated for apostasy. And he had the bishop tell me that I was allowed to come to church, but I was not allowed to speak to anybody at church. And I said, I'm not going to come here and be a bump on the log. And I'm not going to deny what I know is true. And I wasn't causing, and this is like 2 months after we moved here, and we've been going every week. I wasn't causing any problems at church at all. I didn't advertise about my radio program. I didn't tell people about experiences. I kept everything very basic because I didn't want trouble. And they told us that they didn't want us there. So I made a big deal. My wife was in Sunday school when the bishop and the bishopric pulled me into the office and told me that. And I walked into Sunday school and I told my wife, they don't want me to talk in this church. I'm not going to come here. I'm not putting up with this crap. Let's go. And so, like, that caused a little storm that went through the whole ward, where people were like, what's going on? Like, I thought everything was great. Like, you know. So anyway, rumors got out, and this ex-bishop now, I've heard people tell me what he has said about me, and just all these crazy lies that run in this whole community. And I'm called the red bearded false prophet from Emory County. Like, I have friends up in Carbon County that I'm like the only guy in Emory County that has a big red beard like me. And I've had people come up to me, are you the guy they're talking about? And I'm like, yeah, I'm the false prophet. And they all get a chuckle out of it and whatever. But, like, in this county, mostly in this county, in Emory County, people know who I am, and especially if they're LDS. And my kids have been harassed at school because of it. And people are just rude, but they're nice to your face, but they talk behind your back. And then some people are just outright rude. And I hate it. I wish that I lived in Spanish Fork still, because I kind of miss that. And we don't even go to the LDS church anymore because of it. We go to Trinity Christian in Price because we just can't deal with the people anymore. Yeah, and My wife has even talked about having her name removed from the church because we don't want our records to follow us and to receive the kind of harassment that we've received in this county by moving to this place. So anyway, but I don't know why I got into all of that. I wasn't going to talk about that today. But anyway, I think I was talking about how, like, well, I don't know. Anyway, so we funded the program, and so now I'll be able to be on for an hour, up to 3 hours a day, when I can do it, because, you know, I drive a semi-truck at night for 12 hours, and things are, then I have to run the kids, like, get them ready, run them to school, sleep during the daytime, and whatnot. So, but I'm going to try to be more committed to doing the programs, and making the videos, and hopefully we can get this on iTunes soon so that people can listen to the podcast. And hopefully in the next couple of months, I'll be able to get a proper microphone, and because the kids broke my microphone because they left it out and they destroyed the cord and the plug that goes into it. Somehow, I don't know, kids, you know. We have a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old. And a 13-year-old, and I don't know how they do the things that they do. I'm like, what is wrong with you? But if I don't, like, protect things, like, very carefully, they get destroyed. So anyway, but we're going to start I'm going to start trying to do the program. So I'm just going to get into it. And like I said, anybody can listen. On their phones, the guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. I got to get another screen so I can watch the studio. So right now I've got the computer in front of me with recording YouTube Live, and then I have over here, I have Facebook recording live, and then down here I have my phone that I'm talking with this microphone. But I've got a keyboard right here that connects to the phone, and if I scroll down, I can read the book that we're reading, right? So I need to get another one so I can watch the studio. So I don't usually watch the studio. So if you do call in, I'm probably not going to pick on you, and I wouldn't anyway. If you push 1 when you call in, that raises a question mark or an exclamation mark or a hand. It's like raising your hand. And I know at that point that you want to come on the air. And so with the longer programs, I'll be able to take phone calls, questions, comments, which I know that some people are going to absolutely love, because I've got people who are texting me saying, hey, give me a call. Let's talk about this, that, or the other. And I'm like, well, okay, first of all, I don't have time. I barely have time to do the radio program. When I get up, I get ready for work, I have dinner with my family, I go to work, I work all night long, I get home, I get the kids ready for school, I take them to school, then I try to do the radio program if I'm not falling asleep, and then I go to sleep all day long. So I just don't have time to be calling people, and I work in the mountains. Like, I drive up to Schofield, have no cell phone reception up there, up to Skyline Mines at all. And then it breaks up. It's just, I don't have a lot of time to be talking to people, just calling them at different times. But I would like to talk about the gospel when people call in to the radio program if they have questions or comments. So anyway, I have to go pick up my little girl from preschool at 10:30, so I'm going to leave about 10:25, and let's see how far we can get into part 2 of Orne Porter Rockwell, chapter 9 of Blood Atonement by Ogden Kraut, which you can read for free online for yourself at ogdenkraut.com. Click on Read Ogden's Books on the main page. It will take you to a list of links that take you to different books. The second book down, it's called Blood Atonement. I will also post whatever I finish reading at Zion's Redemption Bookstore, complete with the links to the book, the website, the fundamentallymormon.com, if I post there, which I should. and the radio show, the videos. I put it all there at Zion's Redemption Bookstore page on Facebook. And then I post in many, many different groups, like 10 or something different groups. So I actually admin 3 different groups on Facebook, LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussion, LDS Gospel Mysteries, and the other one's slipping my mind right now. But those are the two that I really focus on. But I always post my videos there, and then I allow other people to post things there, even if I disagree with them, as long as it's gospel-oriented. Especially Mormon-oriented, like something Joseph Smith Mormonism, whichever branch of Nauvoo you come from, and actually the LDS Church is not the only branch that came out of Nauvoo. And then, you know, there's fundamentalist Mormons. Like, there's like, I think there's like 250,000 fundamentalist Mormons. So it's not like some small group. Like, and I know that's what the church wants people to think, but it's not just some small group. And we all don't belong to one FLDS church under Warren Jeffs. That is a lie that they want you to believe. The Apostolic United Brethren is the largest. And then the FLDS, and then there are independent fundamentalists that are within the church who kind of keep under, you know, they don't talk a lot because they don't want to get excommunicated from the Brighamite Church in Salt Lake. But then there's the Righteous Branch of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and then there's the Harmston Group and the Kingstons and the All Reds, and like there's many different Mormon breakoffs of the Brighamite Church, but then there's also the RLDS, Community of Christ, the Hedrickites, the Cutlerites, different churches back east that never came and followed Brigham Young that are still churches. The Church of Christ, Temple Lot, you know. I don't care what denomination of Mormonism you come from. I like to hear from all sides. And so I allow people to post from all sides. It's mostly mainstream Mormons in my group, in my groups. Mainstream being Brighamite because they're the largest. It's like, you know, you've got, it's kind of like the Catholic Church is like the church. And then you've got like a whole bunch of like smaller churches that are the other churches. Well, the Brighamite Church is kind of like the church because it's so big. Even though I think the numbers are skewed. They say 16 million, I say 5 million, whatever, because of so many inactives and so many people just leaving the church. But I need to get to some of this. We're going to get to this. All right. I'm going to read. And we're just starting off from where we left off yesterday. Now, I didn't make a YouTube for yesterday's program. Wasn't able to. We did do it on YouTube, though, and that video is posted at Zion's Redemption Bookstore. If you're watching this on YouTube, the reason there's not a part one is because I didn't do a part one on YouTube, but I did a part one on Facebook. So that's at Zion's Redemption Facebook page and Zion's Redemption Bookstore Facebook page. Anyway, so we're starting where we left off yesterday. Reports came back to the Mormons that the army intended to make war. It could mean more devastation than any mob had ever caused. One report said, quote, "The United States are sending 2,500 infantry besides Colonel Sumner's dragoons, which are to rendezvous in Great Salt Lake City this winter, 100 Teamsters, the worst description of men, picked up on the frontier, which are more to be dreaded than the soldiers. They are making great calculations for booty and beauty." End quote, Parowan Historical Record, August 7th, 1857. So these people, these Gentile heathen Goyim people, were coming out to Utah to take the riches, murder the men, and take the women and rescue the women from these horrible, oppressive Mormon polygamists. that they didn't get to come out here because God sent a blizzard in the late spring through Wyoming and pretty much just screwed them all up. And by the time they got to Utah, they couldn't do what they wanted to do. So, which, good. I wish God would do that more often. But anyway, on the other hand, Brigham Young was taking a much milder approach to the situation. He wanted no war nor bloodshed. Blockade the roads, set fire to their trains, burn the whole country before them, keep them from sleeping, but take no life, Brigham ordered. What a different attitude than that of the President of the United States, who was the war maker, the Gentiles, who proposed to shed blood, the Gentiles, who acted in haste without reason or responsibility and was taking a savage stand against innocent people. The Mormons were preparing for the strangest war in military history. It demonstrated the regard that Mormons had for the lives of men, even soldiers. They were not, as a people, bloodthirsty savages, nor were they the kind who would sanction a Mountain Meadows massacre or establish bands of marauders to wreak revenge upon unsuspecting innocent people, as the government of the United States did in Missouri and in Nauvoo to the Mormon people, which they've never apologized for what they have done. Portrays by their attitude and their actions that not only was the United States Army wrong for its offensive actions, but also the army of authors, apostates, and anti-Mormon elements that had howled so long, so hard and so long. Let me just say, the Brighamites that left out of Nauvoo were not going to Utah. They were going to Mexico because this was part of Mexico at the time. They were leaving the United States to seek a safe refuge in the mountains of the Great Salt Lake Valley. But the United States cannot leave the Mormons alone, and they still haven't. They still cannot leave us alone to live our religion. The fundamentalists, they live the religion of early Mormonism. They did not give up the Adam God doctrine, the law of adoption, the gathering of Israel, plural celestial marriage, the law of, there's so many things that the LDS Church, the Brighamite Church, has given up. They've given them up. And I actually enjoy going to, the Righteous Branch in Spanish Fork is my favorite fundamentalist group. I'm an independent. I do have a church ministry called the Church of the Living Messiah, and I do baptize people and do ordinances, but I don't hold meetings. I don't want people to know where I live, except for close friends and family. But they're my favorite group to meet with. So anyway, and they're in Spanish Fork. And if you want to get a hold of Benjamin Schaefer, I'm sure he would be happy to tell you all about it. So that's not where their headquarters is, but that is where the branch is. And I love that church. Anyway, I don't agree with them theologically on every point, but you know what? I don't agree with anybody theologically on every point. So, I mean, I go to a Pentecostal church now, and I'm just like, well, okay, our theology is a little bit different, but my pastor keeps the principles pure, and I haven't had any disagreement with anything he's taught from the pulpit, so I really enjoy going to that church. Anyway, Porter Rockwell, Bill Hickman, and Major Lott Smith acted as a guerrilla force independent on the large force of the Nauvoo Legion. One of the first actions of the campaign was a strange incident involving Porter Rockwell that became a humorous tale often told around the campfire of both sides, or on page 131 of Blood Atonement, chapter 9. Orrin Porter Rockwell was a Mormon mentor for meter for night riding. He sped eastward on the immigration trail for Fort Bridger ahead of Lot Smith with a cruising party, reaching Pacific Springs while the remnant of Colonel Alexander's 10th Infantry were there with beef cattle and the corn train, according to Captain Grin. Rockwell adroitly, I've never even seen that word before, crept behind the night guard and stampeded the mules. For the moment, it seemed as if the disappearing mules had suddenly recognized their ancestry as tracing to Baal or Balaam's ass. But when the wild clatter of hooves ceased about 3 miles down the road, the stable call was ordered by the buglers. The mules heard the call, recognized it as a call to feed, and came galloping back, bringing with them the entire Mormon mount with empty saddles. That's interesting. Jim Bridger by J. Cecil Alter. That doesn't give a page number. But this wasn't the end of that story. It appears that Rockwell and his merry band of men sought another camp to steal some horses. They came near the camp of the 10th Infantry and saw some 15 horses, and all saddled and bridled as though they were ready for an alert or a maneuver. They stole them successfully and rode back to the Big Sandy. In the morning, they were surprised to learn they had stolen the horses from another Mormon scouting group. But soon the events would turn about to their favor. Near Ham's Fork, the government had a large herd of cattle. Gathering 100 men, the Mormon raiders headed for a huge cattle rustling venture that would turn the tide of the war. Without beef for the winter, the expedition would face starvation. Good. When they reached the herd, they found only a few men guarding the cattle, so the Mormon brigade roared down the slopes with war whoops that would have frightened any Indian camp. The boys then gave a shout such as imported steers never heard before, and the latter started away pell-mell, trotting many of the poor under their hooves and killing half a dozen of them. The guards were frightened as badly as the cattle and looked pale as death, end quote, contributor, volume 4, page 48. As the Mormon force passed by some of the sentries, Rockwell turned in his saddle and shouted to the one of them that he knew, "You Roop, when you get to camp, tell Colonel Alexander that we've stopped playing games." We're on page 132. "We'll kill every damn blue coat in his command unless he turns our men loose. Do you hear me, Roop?" So remember, the United States government had sent Johnston's army, a group of 2,500 men plus more that had decided to come kill Mormons and do what they were going to do, destroy the Mormons. And this was the tactics ordered by Brigham Young to stop them from coming, to disrupt their food and whatever. So this is what is going on. And Porter Rockwell, he was right in the midst of it. Anyway, Lot Smith laughed at Porter Rockwell and related, "The guards then started for camp. They were the worst frightened men I ever saw. They ran the three teams until some of the cattle dropped dead, but they never stopped until they got within the lines." Contributor, volume 4, page 49. From here, the little band of warriors raked up several more victories, capturing the enemy's wagon trains, taking what they wanted, leaving just enough supplies for their prisoners, and then burning their wagons. On one of these raids, they overtook a camp with none other than Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bill Cody. It was Cody that later told the whole embarrassing affair and penned, quote, "The strange horsemen had surrounded us. They were all armed with double-barreled shotguns, rifles, and revolvers. We also were armed with revolvers, but we had had no idea of the danger, and these men, much to our surprise, had got the drop on us and had covered us with their weapons so that we were completely at their mercy. The whole movement of corralling us was done so quietly and quickly that it was accomplished before we knew it." End quote. The Great West by Charles Nieder, page 225. The Army soldiers were put on rations. Occasionally, a Mormon command would send in some salt or other necessary provision to sustain them until spring. So they still gave them enough for them to survive, but they were not going to give them enough for them to have strength to come and do their dirty deeds. Of this incident, Senator Sam Houston spoke of the Senate by saying, quote, Any act of civility was tendered by Brigham Young, and you might, if you please, construe it under the circumstances rather as an act of submission. He sent salt to the troops, understanding it was scarce there, and was selling at $7 a pint and that was a lot of money back then, as an act of humanity, thinking at least that it could not be regarded as discourteous. He sent a supply of salt for the relief of the encampment, intimating to the commander that he could pay for it if he would not accept it as a present. What was the message the military officer sent back? I believe that the substance of it was that he would have no intercourse with a rebel, talking about Brigham Young, who was giving them salt so that they could survive, and that when they met, they would fight. They would fight. And if they fight, he would get miserably whipped. Page 133 of Blood Atonement by Ogden Crow. That was the time to make peace with Brigham Young. But instead of that, he sent them a taunt and a defiance. Congressional Globe, 35th Congress, First Session, Volume 24, page 874. And that was General Houston. Houston, Texas. Ring any bells? Anyway, General Van Vliet and Colonel Kane decided to take measures themselves to settle things peaceably. They came to Salt Lake City to confer with Brigham Young. Both were reasonable men of good standing. They could see there was no rebellion or necessity for troops among the Mormons. They took their message back to General Johnston's army, who was in charge of the army expedition. Johnston refused because he wanted to do what he wanted to do, the dirty deed. Johnston refused any cooperation or peace ventures. See, there's no reasoning with these people. These people are the very same people that had Joseph Smith murdered. When Governor Ford said he would protect Joseph Smith and then he withdrew the army and the protection so that the black-faced mob, which was probably full of, you know, these infantrymen that could go in and just murder Joseph and Hiram. He came out here to fight, and that was what he was going to do. Kane actually challenged Johnston to a duel, but nothing occurred any worse than a broken gun over a fence and a lot of shouting. However, the irony of this occasion would again be repeated. Johnston would eventually rebel against the United States in the Civil War, an act which he falsely accused the Mormons, and Colonel Kane would be a general for the Union fighting against him. The new governor of the territory, Alfred Cumming, came into the valley escorted by the Mormons. Reaching Farmington, he was met by a host of Mormons and a band playing the Star Spangled Banner. In Salt Lake City, he was overwhelmed by the reception given him. "Where is the rebellion?" he commented cheerfully. when he asked to see the records of all the territorial documents which had been reported burned, he was given complete access to them. To his surprise, everything was in order. The whole expedition had been in vain. Cummins wrote the letter to General Johnston and another to President Buchanan. I had been everywhere recognized as the governor of Utah and have been universally greeted with such respectful attention as are due the representatives of the executive authority of the United States. I have been employed in examining the records of the Supreme and District Courts, which I am prepared to report upon as being perfect and unimpaired. I have also examined the legislation records and other books belonging to the Secretary of the State, which are in perfect preservation. Page 134. I got to find a place to stop because I got to go pick up my little girl here in just a minute. The books and the records have been kept in a most excellent condition. End quote. House Executive Documents, 36th Congress, Volume 2, page 772 and 93. The war was soon over. All the reports, testimonies, and witnesses against the Mormons became a worthless pile of lies and falsehoods. All the work of the apostates, Mormon haters, and vicious enemies of Brigham Young fell to the dirt where they belonged. How disappointing to all those who wanted the United States to declare war upon the Mormon people. Deputy Marshal Rockwell. And that's where we're going to pick up tomorrow when we come back, hopefully. And I'll probably be back on tomorrow because I'm taking tonight off. I've got some stuff I've got to do. And so I won't be going to work until 7 o'clock at night tomorrow night. And then so I'll definitely be on tomorrow. So I'll have time for that. Anyway, I got to get out of here because my little girl is waiting for me. She'll be out of class here in 5 minutes. Luckily, it's only a mile away. And I'm just going to check the studio real quick and see if anybody's called in. And nobody's called in, so, and that's fine. Anyway, but I'm happy I've been able to fund this. It's something that I've wanted to do for quite some time, almost a year, actually. I started doing Fundamentally Mormon almost a year ago, and we just had our 100th episode a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, I'm really happy that I'm able to do this. And I hope to be able to put out more of these. I want to keep them around an hour, unless I'm just like go crazy like I have done in the past and decide that we need to do more. There's a couple of videos on YouTube that I started off the radio program, and then you can hear the radio program go off the air. And I'm continuing to read because like I want to get through the chapter. And now I'll be able to do that. So I'll set all the programs for the two-hour live streaming with the extra hour of overtime. But whenever I get to a place where I am done reading, I'll just end it there. So, and usually I don't – my daughter goes to preschool and then the babysitter picks her up. But why should she go with the babysitter if I'm home today? So, and I'm not going to take a nap or anything. I'll go to sleep tonight after I get doing – getting wood and stuff because we have to get wood because there's no gas in our house because they never put it in. Everybody, it's so stupid. Everybody else that lives around here has gas in their house, but all we have is a wood-burning stove and some heaters, some electrical heaters. So we got to go get wood and some coal tonight. So anyway, I got to go because my little girl's waiting for me, but I am really thankful for being able to do this episode. Please like, share, subscribe. Check out my Facebook groups. Check out the Facebook page, Zion's Redemption Bookstore. Take care, everyone. Baruch Hashem. God bless and goodbye.